It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Trey Schaap. A golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. By Beechwood Hospitality, we partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am your host, Trey Schaap. At UAMS, Ortho Now is now open at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. If you have an orthopedic injury, sports, work, or anything else, walk in and see the best in orthopedic care. No appointment is needed. Ortho Now, open Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, and Saturday, 8 to noon, conveniently located at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. For more information, call 501-686-TOSH. That's 501-686-8674. Coming up on this edition, I introduce you to Todd Satterfield. He guided the Furman Men's Golf Program through some good times and some difficult times during his 22 years as the school's golf coach. He actually played collegiate golf at the University of Georgia, turned professional, played on the Ben Hogan Tour for several years, and now is a rules official on the PGA Tour Champions. I had a chance to sit down with him when the Simmons Bank Championship, presented by Stevens, was being held at Pleasant Valley Country Club back in October. That interview is coming up after the break. Stay with us.
I'm Dr. Lowry Barnes. When it comes to orthopedic care, there's no place like the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. We built this hospital just for you. With state-of-the-art surgical suites, advanced technology, and the state's largest group of fellowship-trained orthopedic surgeons, it's the best place in Arkansas to get you moving again. And if you need urgent orthopedic care, UAMS Ortho Now is right here for you at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health, where motion lives and service leads.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
The next time you travel to El Dorado and need overnight accommodations, the Haywood Hotel is where you need to stay. The Haywood El Dorado Tapestry Collection by Hilton is a great place to stay if you're in South Arkansas, listening to live music, or playing the challenging Mystic Creek Golf Club. Take time and relax in their bar for a drink before going out on the town for dinner. The Haywood, 210 South Washington, right in the heart of downtown El Dorado. Search the Haywood El Dorado on the web or call 800-293-0718 for reservations. The Haywood, a Beechwood hospitality property.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am your host, Trey Schaap. During Todd Satterfield's time as head coach of the Furman Paladins, he led them to 3 SoCon titles and 4 NCAA regional appearances. He won SoCon Coach of the Year after the 2010 championship, an award that he won 3 other times while at Furman. He played professionally after competing at the University of Georgia, an outstanding Georgia amateur. He is now a rules official with the PGA Tour Champions. On the tee, Todd Satterfield.
Todd, thanks for joining me for another edition of From the Shortgrass. Do you remember the first time you ever picked up a golf club and really fell in love with this game?
Well, I can remember I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and my dad cut off a club of his, and he drilled some holes in it to try to take some of the weight out of it. So I still have that club. It's still in my house somewhere.
Somewhere?
Yeah.
Is it an artifact now?
I think it is, and probably everybody else wouldn't.
Yeah, they'd probably want to throw it out, put it at a flea market or something, maybe.
That's right. But, both of my kids kind of swung it when they were little, so that was fun, too.
When you were learning the game, did you ever think that you would get to where you are now? And we'll talk about the journey here in a little bit, but did you ever think you would get to where you are now?
Yeah, so I had some success early when I was younger playing in tournaments, and I won a state junior when I was 12 and just continued to progress and did well in the state AMs and won a state open and went to play at the University of Georgia. Very fortunate there, and then played professionally for 3 years after that. And then I got into coaching for total of 25 years and ended up out here on the Champions Tour doing rules. So I've been very lucky in my life.
Yeah, let's talk about that trek. The University of Georgia, I mean, they're known for good golf, right?
Yes, yeah. Very good players through the years for a long time.
And you were part of that lineage, that tradition. Who were some of the guys that were on your team?
Some of the guys you may recognize, Franklin Langham had a career on the tour for a little bit. Matt Peterson had a pretty long career, especially on what's now the Korn Ferry Tour. Paul Claxton obviously was a good player. Some of the older guys on my team, Peter Persons, Brad Weaver, Lewis Brown just won the U.S. Senior Am a couple years ago. And then some of the younger guys were Bill Brown and Rob Butler, and then obviously, you know, once I was out of school, they've had a ton of success and with a ton of guys on the PGA Tour right now.
Yeah, a lot of guys on the PGA Tour, a lot of Ryder Cup players as right. well, and, yeah, and major winners too.
Major winners and Ryder Cup players on both sides of the pond too.
Yeah, no doubt you're right about that. It's kind of, I mean, it is an international game, and a lot of the internationals like to come to the States for school, right?
They do, obviously for the education piece of it, but the competition at the college level is crazy. I look at the scores now. I've only been out of it for 7 years now, and the scores these teams are shooting are just incredible. I mean, you know, 50 some under for the tournament, just crazy good, crazy good.
When you decided to turn pro, was it an easy decision or was it a tough decision?
No, it's probably pretty easy for me. I, you know, probably since I was 15 or 16, I always wanted to try to play professionally and see what would happen. So it was an easy decision for me, and I had the support of my family, which was great.
So what happened? 3 years out there?
Well, 3 years, moderate success. I played what the Hogan Tour was in 92, and I had some good finishes, some not so good finishes. And then when I missed Q school the next year, I was kind of in limbo, married not too long ago. And I always thought I would go back to playing, but I had an opportunity to go to Georgia as the assistant coach then. And I took that and just went on from there.
What was that like, being the assistant coach? Not the head coach, but the assistant coach at Georgia.
I mean, I love coaching. I miss that part of it, helping the kids and helping them get better. And hopefully my experiences during that time would help them improve. But, you know, some of the college things now I probably wouldn't have been so crazy about.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now with NIL and all that other stuff. Hey, coach, I need some money. And you're like, hey, well, golf, we don't have it.
Yeah, and where I was coaching at Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina, we were probably and would have still been insulated from that a little bit because of our academics in a small private school. But still, you know, transfer portal and all that, it's just crazy.
Todd, how different was the recruiting pitch from when you were the assistant at Georgia to when, like you say, you go to the private school at Furman? I assume that it changed quite a bit.
Probably changed a little bit. Obviously, I think at Georgia, you know, most of my players or the guys I was recruiting would come in and they had aspirations to play the tour. Some at Furman, not as many. You know, I had guys that would go on to law school, med school, you name it. So they just had different aspirations of what they wanted to do with their life. And I did have some that went on to play professionally. Matt Davidson played the Korn Ferry for a long time, and he came back as my assistant and is now the head coach there and doing quite well.
He is doing quite well. I had a chance to take him to dinner when he was in town for the Little Rock Trojans.
Yeah, you told me that the other day. He was certainly, you know, one of the two or three best players I ever coached and just a great guy. And he's got a good squad, and I go up there still and practice when I'm home and see him and try to keep up with him.
The practice schedule for the guys when they were at Georgia, obviously class work is different nowadays as well with so much online that they can do. They can go out and pretty much practice whenever they want to. But back when you were coaching, at Georgia and at Furman. Obviously, Furman being a private school, I would think academics, academics, academics. Georgia, maybe not so much, but yeah, there is that academic side. How would you handle the practice time with your guys?
Well, you know, I always felt like in golf, if you had to set a practice time, you probably weren't going to have the best team because your guys didn't have to be there to run plays and things like that. They had to be my best players were very self-motivated. I never had to check on them, make sure they were doing what they needed to do. And, you know, certainly you would be there to help them and improve. But I always felt like if you had to structure that out for on golf, it probably wasn't a great thing.
When you see the G, that big power G, I mean, does that get to you a little bit?
It's giving me chills thinking about it now. My wife went to Georgia, and obviously we're huge Georgia fans on all fronts. So,
when did you decide that, okay, I'm done with coaching, let's try something else? Did a position open up for you to become a rules official?
So I always felt like when I was coaching that I would eventually transition into administration. My dad was involved in the State Golf Association in West Virginia where I grew up and was always involved in the rules, and I started going to the rules schools 30 years ago and was fortunate to be a consulting member on Rules of Golf, so I've officiated the Masters, and I'd done some Corn Ferry things, and then the position came up on the Champions Tour. I had a friend who was there, and I called him, and probably because I was just looking for something else to do, I felt like it was time. And it worked out perfectly for me.
You get to travel a lot.
It's a good bit of travel, but you know, it's good. It's, we travel one day a week on Mondays. I know, you know, another business guy, they might be on the plane 3 days a week doing what they do. So it isn't terrible, but we are gone a good bit. I think for me personally, it would have been hard with a young family, but both of my children are grown and married. And it's easy. My wife, likes the part when I'm home, and when I'm home, I'm home. I don't have an office to go into, so it's really a pretty good situation for us.
Does she get to go with you on any trips?
She comes a couple times. She's a school teacher, and this is her last year. She's getting ready to retire, so I would say she'll be out a few more times.
Let's dive into some of the rules. I mean, because golf is a game that basically you police yourself, right?
It is. You know, we're as rules officials, we're not out there to call penalties like you would see a referee at a football or basketball game. We're there to interpret situations, and obviously, you know, our fields, if you would say, are all different, and you never know what you might roll up into. But we're there, I think all of us look at it, we're there really to help the player. We're not there to get them in trouble or anything. We're there to help them out of situations. And
sometimes when, I guess, you get to a course, obviously I would think you – go and check, make sure everything's marked correctly and have to go over that. And then you're in charge of setting up the golf course, right, for the play?
Right. So our staff, we have this particular week and every week we'll have an advance official there. And they're the ones that'll be out doing the boundaries, doing the penalty areas, putting the paint down, anything really to do inside the ropes. And then after the rest of the staff gets here, we'll have one guy setting up the front side, so they'll be choosing hole locations and tee locations for the tournament, and a different official setting up the backside. Tuesday morning, we all do a course tour to go around and talk about anything with the marking that we may need to adjust or confirm what the advance official's done. So, and that way, we know what we might be rolling into when a ruling's called.
Obviously, working a major like you have the Masters and some of the other big events you have, I'm sure there have been some funny and crazy rulings come up. Can you think of any off the top of your head?
Yeah, the one that really comes to mind was out in Newport Beach, California. I was probably, this has been 3 or 4 years ago, and one of the qualifiers, great guy Rick Garboski, had qualified, and he didn't play great the first day. So the second day he comes around on a par three, and he hits his shot, and long story short, he ends up running out of golf balls, not because he played bad that day, but he was giving them to kids and just having a great time.
Right. And the one ball rule's in effect.
Well, the one ball rule was in effect. So he asked, I remember Mark Kalkovecki and Duffy Waldorf were in the group, and he asked any one of them if they had a left dash Titleist. And no, they weren't playing that. So he's thinking he is out of the tournament. And he comes over to me and says, I've run out of balls. So in the meantime, one of our other rules officials had gone back to the clubhouse to get some out of his locker. I had a ball in my cart that he was able to complete the hole, but obviously he got a penalty for playing, breaching the one ball rule. But he couldn't tee off the next hole knowing that he was breaching that, or it would have been a DQ. So we got the balls out to him, and he was able to play the next hole and go in. And it was a long deal. And then Calcavecchia had something on social media that night, and it blew up. The rules officials messed that up. But the USGA said we did it exactly by the book.
Well, then there you go. Yeah, I mean, how many times do you get called away from just a particular event? But let's say someone's playing in some event somewhere else, and they've got your number, and they're stuck with a rule situation. They end up dialing your phone up.
Yeah, well, you know, being a college coach, I've still got a ton of friends, and I'd say once every other week I'll get a call. They'll be at a tournament and say, hey, you know, this happened. And obviously, a lot of times it's hard if you're not there and you're seeing exactly what happened. So some of the explanations, you got to ask a lot of questions to hopefully get it right.
Todd, would you suggest that anybody that obviously wants to play the game for more than just fun, learn the rules because they can help you as well, definitely, more so than hurt?
Yeah, definitely can help you in getting out of certain situations. I will say when they change the rules change not in the right word, but they did a big overhaul in 2019. And I think they've made them a little more intuitive for everyone to read through them. And you don't necessarily, to know the rules at a great level, you don't necessarily have to know all the clarifications and be a rules official. I think you could go, but you know, it would be a big help for someone who especially maybe wanted to play at a more elite level in your state competitions and things like that, to know the rules.
And some of the changes, obviously, where you drop the golf ball from, the amount of time you have to look for your golf ball if it is lost, and some of the procedures that you can follow if, let's say, you hit a ball out of bounds, that you can actually not have to go back to the tee now.
Yeah, and that's really a local rule. You don't use that in an elite competition, sure, but that would be at your club level. But, you know, several things like searching for the ball and all designed to hopefully help the game speed along and play a little faster. I know dropping from the knee height, there was a movement actually to be able to place the ball at your nearest point of relief, but some of the higher-ups couldn't get past that. But, you know, it used to be, you may remember, you used to have to drop it over your shoulder, oh, yeah, and then it went to arm length. And then now everything's within this relief area, which makes more sense. And just dropping it from your knee, it doesn't roll out of the relief area a lot.
A lot of people say, why can we not move our ball out of a divot in a fairway?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest question I get. I understand it, and I'm probably sympathetic to it, but it comes down to, when does a divot stop being a divot, and it's just not a great lie?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the biggest part. Obviously, if it's a new divot and deep, everybody knows that. But, you know, sometimes the ball may just be sitting down a little in the fairway and somebody said, well, that's a divot. Well, you know, it might have been a divot a month ago, possibly. Just hard to draw that line for me.
When you're dealing with casual water, we saw that in the U.S. Open this year.
Yeah.
What goes into that when a rules official steps in?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear cut on being able to see water either before or after you take your stance. You know, somebody like me, I'm a little more heavy set, so I'm going to be able to draw temporary water before other people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, honestly, I don't think that's necessarily right that I can get it and other people wouldn't. It's the same amount of water there. You know, at the Open, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know, when you watch it on TV, you think maybe he did have temporary water, but his relief was going to be over in the rough anyway, which probably was not going to be certainly any better than what he had. It was just one of those situations where it was an extreme weather condition, and those are always hard to deal with.
Golf being a game played outside, you never can predict the weather. You try your best. When a rules official has to make a decision to blow the horn, is that obviously everybody's on board with that, and it's all at one time?
So we have a tournament director, our bosses, and they're ultimately the one that makes the decision, along with our meteorologist. You know, we'll obviously blow the horn for a danger situation, for lightning. That's a big one. As far as the course becoming unplayable, that's when the greens would puddle up and really make the course you know, where you can't finish it, even though, you know, you can, you're able to move the ball in certain situations. If the hole's completely surrounded by water, you really can't play golf properly.
Speaking of, you know, earlier we were talking about the casual water and everything, and I go to the USGA because they're not going to let you touch the golf ball at
all. That's right.
PGA Tour, PGA Tour champions, there are times when you do play preferred lies, and I know the players love that.
Yeah, there are times when we play preferred lies. In my view, I think you do it for two reasons. If you have a lot of temporary water, somebody might be able just to get it to a little less temporary water rather than having to go 30 or 40 yards to get full relief. And then the other part, and some people agree, disagree with this, if your ball's collecting mud when it hits, I believe that mud shouldn't be – that doesn't do much to determine your skill level. It's more about luck at that point on which way the ball goes. So mm-hmm. I'm very lenient's not the right word, but but I understand the mud, and I agree that, you know, let's get the mud off there and let's test your skill.
Have there been any crazy rules, scenarios that have popped up at Augusta National when you've been there for the Masters that you can remember?
Not when I was there. I think they've had a couple controversial ones in the probably the last 5 or 6 years. I think Tiger had one where he dropped it, and that was a bit controversial. And then the other one was on the advice rule. I think Brooks Koepka was involved in that maybe. But, you know, they've got – obviously there's a bunch of tour guys. There's guys in the USGA, guys from all over the world. The best of the best are there. So
when you think about the golf ball and they're going to dial it back, 28. I've spoken with Fred Perpall, big proponent of it. RNA's on board as well. How do you think the guys, PGA Tour champions and the PGA Tour, are going to take it? And what's going to be the stance of the tour, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure. Obviously, I'll say this as Todd Satterfield and not an employee of the tour. I am not in favor of that personally. Golf's a super popular sport, and I don't think people want to see the ball go, you know, have Rory's drives go any shorter. Now, I'm also a big believer that the ball has become a little more forgiving along with the driver head. So somehow you need to get back to a quality of contact with the driver, where if somebody can swing it fast and hit it in the center of the club and have the club face square, it ought to go far and straight, really far and straight. But if somebody hits it in the high toe or low heel, like, you know, if you've ever hit a persimmon driver, they didn't go that well. And I think that's where the game needs to get back to. But if somebody can swing it fast and hit it right in the center, it ought to go far. And that's exciting. People love to see that. I think my brother's a professional up in New York, and he gets some juniors coming through there. I think the interesting part will be to see, especially if they completely roll the ball back, or if they have two different balls maybe for an elite competition, on where a junior player, where you might switch them over to start playing the elite ball to get ready for to move on. I think that's going to be, you know, depending on which way they go, and I don't know that. I mean, that's way above my pay grade. I just, and, you know, trust me, with my own game, I lost a ton of distance. I don't want to lose anymore.
Exactly. I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm going up to my guy, and I'm like, hey, you got to do something to this club, because, I mean, it needs to go further. And
yeah.
It's not going as far as I remember it going. I mean, that's something we lose. But what's it like for you to be out here with some of the greats that have ever played this game?
Oh, it's great. These guys are all great. And it's, you know, I did have an opportunity years ago when I was in college. Actually, I was working at a newspaper during the summer, and there was a senior tour tournament at the Greenbrier. And I knew some people, and somebody didn't show up for the pro-am, and I got to play with Bruce Crampton, and which was really cool. But, you know, then you could kind of see it was not that it's not fun out here for these guys, but I think it's more competitive. I mean, these guys are unbelievable. You know, a lot of them still hit it, you know, really, really great and really far. And it's just fun to watch them play. I knew a lot of these guys from playing college golf and playing professional golf, but it's great to be out here. This is more like a family.
The real golfers that follow the game that are listening to this will understand this question.
Okay.
Slugger White. Well, what is he like?
Oh, man, Slugger. I don't know Slugger that well, honestly. You know, obviously, being from West Virginia, I think he and his brother were Oak Hill, and I actually beat his brother Mike in a playoff to win the West Virginia Open. So
there you go.
Both of those guys are great players. And my club where I grew up used to have this tournament. The local newspaper would host it, and Slugger won the tournament the first 2 years. So, I mean, Slugger's a legend there. And obviously, being a tour player and then switching over to rules, and he's just a legend in the game.
How do we speed up the game? Pace of play?
Yeah, great question. I think it's more just people need to be ready to play when it's their turn, is more what I see. You know, all this, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting that even the fast players do the same thing, looking in their yardage book, and we're able to use rangefinders out here now. So I think they're doing all the same things. It's just they're doing it before it's their turn to go, and when it's their turn to go, they're ready to play.
Yeah. Best golf course you've ever played?
My favorite one, this is a pretty easy one, is Shinnecock Hills up in New York.
Ooh.
Yeah, my brother.
U.S. Open next year.
Yeah, I wish I had the game to maybe even still try to qualify for it. But that, and I've been very, very fortunate in my life. I don't mean to knock Augusta National, but I played there. But Shinnecock's still my favorite. It's tremendous.
Fantasy foursome, living or deceased, Todd. I mean, you've played with a lot of the greats that you could play a round of golf with. Who would they be?
Well, my fantasy foursome doesn't include any greats. My dad, my brother, who's a terrific player, and my son. That's a great, great day for me. Fantasy foursome, you know, who wouldn't maybe choose Tiger to play with? You know, Palmer, and I'll add Nicklaus in there. Probably three greatest players in history.
I would think so. Any chance Tiger stays healthy enough to play PGA Tour Champions?
Boy, we sure hope so. I mean, obviously, being who he is, he would be a shot in the arm for us, and I think our tour's popular, especially being here in Little Rock. This is a great venue for us. Golf course is tremendous. There seems to be a lot of excitement last year, and that's spilled over to this year. But, you know, I mean, Tiger's just at a different level with
that. He sure is. Sure is. The ball sounds a lot different when he hits it, too.
Yeah, it does. It always has. And I think he's been able to keep his speed up. And, you know, the guys that are down there in South Florida that see him occasionally, you know, say, man, he's still hitting it great. So, but, you know, it'll be interesting. Hopefully the back surgery goes well. Just, you know, personally for him would be great.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully for golf, he'll be able to play.
Let's hope so. Todd, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Trey.
From Central Arkansas to South Arkansas to Northeast Arkansas, across the state to Northwest Arkansas, you will find a Beechwood hospitality property. From the Haywood in El Dorado to the Hilton Garden in Jonesboro to the Doubletree in Bentonville and the Staybridge Suites just south of Baumwalker Stadium, Beechwood Hospitality has a room for you. Beechwood Hospitality is the leader in hotel property management in the state. Make sure you find a Beechwood Hospitality Hotel for your next overnight stay.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own. To seize opportunity. To anticipate rather than react. To deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world. And to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE SIPC.
I'm Dr. Lowry Barnes. When it comes to orthopedic care, there's no place like the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. We built this hospital just for you. With state-of-the-art surgical suites, advanced technology, and the state's largest group of fellowship-trained orthopedic surgeons, it's the best place in Arkansas to get you moving again. And if you need urgent orthopedic care, UAMS Ortho Now is right here for you at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health, where motion lives and service leads.
That's about all the time we have for this edition of From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I want to thank Matthew Allen and Blair Allen, Beechwood Hospitality. They know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, make sure you stay at a Beechwood Hospitality hotel. You heard Todd Satterfield talk about it. Tiger Woods, will he play on PGA Tour Champions? There are those that hope that he does. He did say at a press conference before his Hero World Challenge this week that he is starting to swing again. He has been cleared to chip and putt, so trying to work back from that back injury. Let's hope Tiger is able to do it. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, you need to fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon. From the Shortgrass.
You have been listening to From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.